All right, well, good morning or afternoon. I'm sorry, good morning or afternoon. I don't know where everybody's meeting us today, but thank you for joining us for our part two on diversifying the clinical trial researcher cohort. It will be led by our very own Vice President Gretchen Wortmann. She is, if you know Gretchen, she's probably one of the most thoughtful people on public policy in the healthcare space that you can meet. And she's probably tired of me referring people to talk to her about regulations and changes to laws, but you know, she's the best. So I have to go ahead and acknowledge her, and Laco, who works with her as a fellow who's been also been instrumental in the work that we're doing here at NQF. Before I turn it over to them and Dr. Watson, I just want to have a couple of housekeeping items. One, some announcements rather, that one, very excited, our registration for our 20th annual summit on health disparities is available. So we'll put a link in the chat so you can, if you're interested in registering, learning about it, you can do that. And then two, we only have about a few days to go before, actually one full, no, just yeah, just a few days to go before all the applications for the 40 under 40 are due. So please register if you're interested in coming and apply if you're available. Thanks so much. And I'll go ahead and change it, turn it over to Gretchen.
Thank you, Brandon. And for those who may have connected a little late, my name is Gretchen Wortmann. I'm Vice President for Policy and Program of the National Minority Quality Forum and Director of our Institute for Equity in Health Policy and Practice. This webinar this afternoon is a continuation of our exploration of the potential of the All of Us Research Program to advance efforts to diversify the clinical researcher cohort in the United States. I am so pleased that we are joined today by Dr. Kareem Watson, the Chief Engagement Officer for the All of Us Research Program at the National Institutes of Health and Director of their Division of Engagement and Outreach. Dr. Watson oversees the strong network of All of Us community partners, participant ambassadors, and research organizations who have a focus on engaging people and communities who have been left out of medical research in the past. Dr. Watson has earned a doctorate in health sciences, a master of science in basic medical research, and an MPH in community health sciences. He has served as a principal investigator on multiple projects, including those funded by the National Cancer Institute, the National Institute on Minority Health and Health Disparities, and the All of Us Research Program. To set the stage, I'd like to take a few minutes to provide an overview of the All of Us Research Program. NIH, through the All of Us Research Program, seeks to gather health and lifestyle data from 1 million or more U.S. residents to inform a longitudinal cohort study that will be operational for at least 10 years. All of Us, which entered our consciousness as President Barack Obama's Precision Medicine Initiative, is an effort to enable more precise research that can lead to more effective therapies and thus reduce patient risk. Funding for the All of Us Research Program, up to $1.5 billion over a 10-year period, is authorized by the 21st Century Cures Act. Of particular interest to the National Minority Quality Forum was the objective articulated by Dr. Francis Collins, then director of the National Institutes of Health, that at least 70% of the participants in the All of Us Research Program will represent populations that are HUBR, historically underrepresented in biomedical research. These HUBR populations include, but are not limited to, ethnic populations other than white non-Hispanic males, LGBTQ+ individuals, women of color, and individuals who reside in rural or non-metropolitan areas. And as an aside, I'll note that that's a significant percentage of the American general population who have not been included in biomedical research in the past. The All of Us Research Program, therefore, represented and continues to represent to us a pathway to eliminating barriers to increasing, the diversity in clinical research of the populations that have an opportunity to participate in clinical research. Approximately 3 years after full launch, more than 300,000 individuals are fully enrolled. Excuse me. Using a data set informed by participant surveys, electronic health records, biospecimens, and wearable technologies, the All of Us Research platform will support researchers from different backgrounds to make discoveries that lead to new prevention strategies and treatments for foundational health challenges. Of particular importance in our view is the potential of the All of Us Research program to increase the diversity of the researchers who have an opportunity to participate in clinical research. Dr. Watson will address that question today. Throughout this webinar, please feel free to enter your questions into the Q&A box. The Q&A box, not the chat box. Questions were also submitted during the registration process, and to the degree we have time, I will incorporate them into our Q&A. And of course, I have a few questions of my own. We will attempt to answer as many of the questions that are submitted as possible. Dr. Watson, the podium is yours.
Thank you so much for that kind introduction, and thank you for the opportunity to share a little bit more about the All of Us Research Program. You did such a great job, Gretchen, of introducing where we are to date in the All of Us Research Program and some priorities. So for just the next 10 minutes, I want to do just some additional level setting and to create some ground space for us to have conversations additionally and to engage in some questions about, you know, just some key factors as to progress of what we've been able to accomplish in terms of diversity, equity, and inclusion as it relates to the All of Us Research Program. As was noted in my introduction, by training, I am a health disparities researcher. My research is focused on cancer prevention and control, with a particular focus on cancer disparities, particularly among underserved populations. And I remember, Gretchen, early on in my career, when I was thinking about what population did I want to focus my research efforts on. I have a unique lived experience where I got into this space because of my own personal lived experience, having lost a parent at a very early age to breast cancer and growing up in a small town in Michigan that didn't have access to the big academic medical centers, where I later found out that's where a lot of the clinical research takes place, the clinical trials take place. So early on, I saw what inequities look like in terms of where cutting edge research takes place and how that can lead to, you know, lack of access and outcomes in certain populations. And I remember when I decided to focus a lot of my research as a result of my postdoc work with Dr. Robert Nguyen in cancer disparities, particularly among minority men, and I was startled at the lack of access I had to data. And what I mean by that is that when you do these big research studies, you ask these audacious questions, you have to have data that you can compare your answers to. Whenever I would go to look at big national surveys that included particularly like African-American men and their smoking habits and their exposures to different cancers, the data sets were always so small. And when I would ask colleagues about that, they would encourage me not to potentially, you know, zero my research career in on underrepresented populations because the data was missing. And when they talked about this concept of missing data, Gretchen, they framed it in the sense of hard to reach populations. And that was a term that I rejected early on in my career, that certain populations are hard to reach. That didn't resonate with me. What resonated for me was that research must be conducted by the right people, the right way, in the right places. And that's what led me as an early researcher to really be excited about the All of Us Research Program, because my hope and my prayer was that it lived up to its name and that, you know, the name would be its call to action, All of Us. So what did that mean for me as a researcher? It meant that for a change, I would have an opportunity to have access to a database that included participants that truly reflected the rich diversity of the U.S. And like you said in your introduction, the All of Us Research Program set out with a bold goal over the next 5 years to enroll 1 million or more participants. And we're almost at that, we're at that 5-year mark, and we're almost at the halfway mark. To date, we've enrolled over 458,000 participants as of January 31st. And of those 458,000, Gretchen, more than 317,000 of them have completed the majority of baseline, what we call baseline elements. And what I'm really excited about is that you quoted that original number that Dr. Collins and other NIH leadership wanted us to strive towards of getting at that 70% or more of that of those participants reflecting the rich diversity of the U.S. We have actually surpassed that, and we're actually at 80%. 80% of our participants reflect the rich diversity of the U.S. in terms of those populations that have been historically underrepresented in biomedical research. And what do we mean by that category? We mean, of course, race and ethnicity. And we've actually achieved something groundbreaking in terms of race and ethnicity. Over 50% of the All of Us participants are actually diverse in terms of race and ethnicity. And when we think about this February being Black History Month, proud to note that 20% of our participants in the All of Us Research Program are actually identify as Black or African American. And these are unprecedented numbers, Gretchen, numbers that when I was a researcher or early stage investigator, I didn't have access to data sets like the All of Us Research Program, which actually could have really changed the trajectory of my career when you think about what I would have had access to and the questions I could have been able to ask as a result of having access to that data. And the other thing I want to highlight, you know, in terms of the groundwork is our intentionality. The ability to get those participants that truly reflect the rich diversity of the U.S. was not by happenstance. When we use these words, diversity, equity, inclusion, and access, DEIA, the other I talk about in there is intentionality. And the program has been intentional since its prior to launch in ensuring that community-based organizations were a part of the work that we did prior to launch. We think about the historical reference of having Black Greek letter organizations as a part of our consortium of community-based organizations. You think about the fact that we have faith-based partners like the National Baptist Convention USA as part of our group of consortium partners. The other thing we did was that acknowledged that place matters. We set out early on in the program, Gretchen, to ensure that where research took place also was in places where populations who have historically been underserved get their care. For example, federally qualified health centers. Federally qualified health centers and community health centers have been a part of the All of Us Research Program since its inception. Since we first launched, we've had sites that are able to enroll at FQHCs and community health centers. And we were also intentional about the sites and the regional medical centers across the U.S., ensuring that we had locations in rural communities, locations in the South and the Deep South, and understanding that we have staff and a team at those local sites that are able to engage participants in a way that is culturally responsive, culturally sensitive, and in many cases, culturally congruent to the everyday experience of those populations. And lastly, Gretchen, as I end, I want to talk about the importance of the messenger. Another thing that I like to say in the All of Us program is that we acknowledge that the messenger matters. So in addition to ensuring that intentionality around diverse participants, we also have intentionality around diverse researchers. As we'll talk more about in today's discussion, we are now at the point where we have opened up our data to ensure that researchers who are the ones that are asking these questions about health disparities, health inequities, and genomics, and those concepts of intersectionality of genomics and social determinants of health, that we now have publicly available data that anyone can get access to that's publicly available and that's aggregated into large, that doesn't have protected health information associated with it. So that's publicly available that anyone can get access to now. But we also have a register tier that researchers can go in and register, find out if their institution has an agreement with the All of Us program so that they can begin to register on our workbench to begin to ask some of those questions. And soon we'll have a control tier that is more where we'll be releasing the genomics data. And the reason I talk about these different levels of access to data, and I'm sure we'll do a deeper dive into that, is because this allows us to ensure that researchers also reflect the rich diversity of our participants. And ensuring that as we think about our goal to have 10,000 or more researchers accessing the All of Us data to be able to ask questions around health disparities, health inequity, and to be able to disentangle some of those sticky questions that have led to poor health outcomes for populations. We also want to ensure that we give intentionality to researchers from populations that have been historically underrepresented, ensuring that we partner with historically Black colleges and universities, minority-serving institutions, Hispanic-serving institutions, and others. So I'll stop there, Gretchen, to see if we want to engage into some questions or comments to further talk about what I've described in terms of where we are with the All of Us Research Program.
Thank you. And my immediate reaction to your comments is the fact that you added access to DEI. I'm not hearing enough of that. I haven't been using it in that way, but that is ultimately the crux of the problem, that the intentions don't tend to translate into improved access either for participants or for researchers. And I would say in through my lens, that has always been the potential of the All of Us Research Program, to open the doors for all. So I'm going to sort of move to a question to try to tease a little more information out of you, which is sort of building on that, on your comments. How can the All of Us Research Program be leveraged as a resource to improve the health of the public with a specific focus on communities of color? And I'm going to bundle a couple of questions, and then you can work your way through them. How can all of us expedite innovation through that lens? Do you have any information on the number of Black or African-American researchers who are approved to use the All of Us Research Workbench? And if you have the data, we don't need to limit that question to just Black or African-American researchers, because once again, we're speaking to the issues that attend access for all populations who have historically been marginalized by the research enterprise. So that simple question, I'll pass to you.
Yeah, and thank you so much for those questions. And I want to start off too by acknowledging the fact that All of Us Research Program recently hired a director of diversity, equity, and inclusion and access, Dr. Martin Mendoza. And Dr. Mendoza's role is so vital and really speaks to the commitment and the mission of the program to move this work forward. And I have to give credit to Dr. Mendoza for adding that A to our work, Gretchen, in terms of the access. And even recently, as we're coming up with our 5-year objectives and goals, you know, many people talk about SMART objectives, make sure that objectives are, you know, specific, measurable, achievable, reachable, and timely. And Dr. Mendoza actually added SMART T goals. He added an I and an E to our objectives to make sure that they're inclusive and equitable, even in our goals and our objectives. So I bring that out because I want to encourage others to add that A to DEI, and also add that I and that E to SMART objectives and goals. So thanks to Dr. Mendoza for that. Second, to answer a question about what are the ways that we're trying to expedite innovation in the All of Us Research Program? That's just a great question. One of the ways we're trying to do that is exactly what you said. And I'll give you hopefully a concrete example of that. Many times, as I began to talk about in my work, when you think about asking some of these tough questions around intersectionality, around, it's not just enough to say, why are certain populations impacted by health disparities such as blindness and glaucoma, right? But you have to say, what are some intersecting things, whether they're health-seeking behaviors or systematic barriers that may prevent certain populations? But historically, when you begin to ask these questions, the data that you have to ask these questions to get at what we call in science statistically significant results, or to be able to truly say that the data set was large enough to really be able to say that the difference was due to science and not of a chance, has usually been really small. But because the All of Us program has this intentionality around this large data set, researchers like Dr. Sally Baxter have been able to ask questions around medication adherence, social determinants of health, and health-seeking behavior around health literacy, around populations living with diabetes and glaucoma, and how it impacts what we see in terms of health inequities due to blindness in the population of historically populations of color. We would not have been able to answer those types of questions without having this type of data set and the intersectionality of that data set. And so we're definitely able to expedite research in that way. And we want researchers to come in and ask other questions. I'm also thinking about, you know, you said, what does that our researcher pool look like today? Well, today I mentioned the fact that we have over 1,100 researchers registered on our workbench. And while we've made audacious and bold, you know, steps towards diversity, equity, and inclusion when it comes to our participants, we have a ways to go, Gretchen, when it comes to our researchers. To date, only about 6% of our researchers on our workbench are actually African American. So that means we have a lot of work to do in this area. And when we think about those reasons why researchers are historically, you know, white or Caucasian have access to the workbench, you think about this, who's the mentors, right? I think about the fact that when I was, you know, looking for a research mentor, you know, I was fortunate to have Dr. Robert Lamb, one of the, you know, the second African-American cancer center directors, NIH funded, you know, well-funded and well-versed in how to obtain and to guide his mentees and his postdocs into getting NIH funding. But, you know, that shouldn't be a rarity, right? Unfortunately, prior to coming to the NIH All of Us Research Program, I was part of a small group. That small group included a single-digit percentage of Black researchers who get R01 funding. That should not be the case, right? That's not a group that I want to be able to brag and say I'm a part of, because we know that we have a lot of work to do in that area. But to date, only, like I said before, only about 6% of the researchers that are utilizing our workbench are African American. So we are setting out to make sure that we do a lot of intentional community engagement efforts, reaching out to HBCUs, having conversations about what are some of those historical and current reasons for access, for the lack of access that researchers say that they have to our workbench. I'll stop there and give you time to ask more clarifying questions around.
Well, I think you just opened two doors. One is, if you could expand a bit on the efforts that the All of Us Research Program and NIH writ large are undertaking to more constructively engage with degree granting and research institutions who serve these HUBR populations, whether categorized as participants or researchers. But also, I would add to that, that based upon some of the work we, some of the input we received through our thought leaders meetings a few years ago, there are also researchers of color in predominantly white institutions who also have challenges getting access to the kind of the funded research, but what you're speaking to very specifically is to the data to support that research. So going through either door, either the institutions who are designated as historically Black colleges and universities, Hispanic or and Asian serving institutions, or predominantly white institutions where many researchers of color are engaged. How are you engaging with those institutions to build capacity, open pathways, or even create awareness of the fact that these barriers exist and need to be overcome?
Yeah, I'll answer that, Gretchen, by giving an example. Actually, that's a little bit outside of the All of Us program, but it is within the NIH, and it goes to my own personal and professional experience and exposure. And it was with the NCI, the National Cancer Institute, and their Center to Reduce Cancer Health Disparities, the CRCHD, led by Dr. Sonia Springfield. I owe so much to Dr. Springfield for my advances as a cancer disparities researcher because of the thoughtfulness that she had in developing places and spaces for researchers. At the time, I was called an early stage investigator. I was within 10 years of my doctoral degree and my training. And what I loved about the programs that Dr. Springfield and others put in place was that they had a program that was called a P20, and it was a partnership developing grant. What that grant did, it allowed a minority serving institution or a HBCU or an institution that was historically underfunded in terms of the NIH dollars to partner with large cancer centers. to build partnership and to have some protected time for that partnership to be developed. And what I learned through that work that Dr. Springfield did and that intentionality is I learned that at many of these teaching institutions, many of these minority serving institutions, their first priority is exactly that. It's teaching. It's advancing the educational status of their students. So they oftentimes don't have the dedicated resources to support for research and the resources to do that. So through programs that like these P partnership development grants, you're able to set aside some protected time to develop the research career of early stage investigators that come from these institutions. You're able to develop intentional mentoring and sponsorship and do a lot of career development plans that can address those gaps. The other thing that I was able to do through those efforts, Gretchen, was to get mentoring and to have access to research peers across the country, where we would convene at the NIH for a researcher day, where I would meet like-minded researchers who had similar lived experiences, who had similar challenges, and we could talk about some of the barriers that they went to. And within that protected space, and then that partnership grant could turn into a larger grant that allowed you to address health disparities research and get pilot funding. And I was fortunate enough to be one of the researchers that actually got pilot funding through that center that Dr. Springfield developed. And that pilot funding was then able to turn into a larger R01 grant for me. So it was very intentionality. So again, when I look at what worked for me, what happened, what allowed me to advance through the pipeline as a researcher from an underrepresented group, what was that intentionality look like? It looked like buying out time that I could have protected time from my teaching to do the research. It looked like giving me space to have a mentorship, but also a community to where I could have a safe space to address some of the systemic issues that we face, some of the implicit and explicit bias that we know still takes place, that imposter syndrome that we sometimes deal with, right? Having a community of peers that I could talk to about what I was dealing with on a regular basis, having resources to support the types of questions that I want to ask. Early on in my career, Gretchen, I was actually discouraged from doing research on minority men, as I said before, because I was told that I wouldn't get funded. I was told that it's difficult to get funded on populations, and it's difficult to get funded doing community engaged research, the type of research that I wanted to do. So I highlight that, Gretchen, hopefully as a real example that people can go to, and you can look it up. You can go to the public database and look up the NCI, Center to Reduce Cancer Health Disparities, and look at the work that they're doing there. Because it was through programs like that that helped me advance as a researcher and that helped me get the research and support that I needed.
So thank you. We have questions in the chat, not in the Q&A box, people. So I wasn't saying them initially because they're in the chat. One of the questions that has been asked is, given that racial classifications are a social construct, not rooted in scientific fact, what is the All of Us research program doing to remove biases and assumptions that have been historically injected into clinical data sets?
A big question.
Read that one again.
I think I got it. So I've had the privilege of being mentored by and working with one of my local heroes, Dr. Rick Kittles, an African-American geneticist. And I was fortunate enough to hear Dr. Kittles talk about the social constructs of race early on in my career. And Dr. Kittles' work framed a lot of and Dr. Kittles is a geneticist, an African-American geneticist. And one of the things that Dr. Kittles taught me early on in my work is to understand the impact of the social construct of race and what role it may play in health outcomes, but also understand the impact of ancestry and genomics. And so having been able to learn from researchers like Dr. Kittles about what the difference between the social construct of race as well as the understanding of ancestry and genomics is one thing that has been able to help me in my career. Now, how does that relate to the All of Us program? In terms of the data, we are looking at genomics. And that is one of the things that we're understanding, is that understanding of course, we ask information about race, but we also are understanding that we want to know more information about genomics. Are there certain ancestral markers that may put populations at risk for getting for need to get screened earlier for some cancers? I think about Dr. Kittle's earlier work that looked at prostate cancer disparities and looking at men that may have elevated percentage of West African ancestry. And what did that say about the need to get screened or have to ask different questions to your provider about prostate cancer screening, right? But now stigmatization was the other question that came. We have a whole policy team that I'm very proud of in the All of Us Research Program that actually has guidance on what that means, because not only do we have to have an understanding and a proactive stance, Gretchen, and an approach to that, but we have to have policies around that for not just African-American data, but we have policies around American Indian, Alaskan Native data. When you think about stigmatization, you really have to think about what that looks like, even with the researcher workbench. So one of the things in the researcher workbench is that, yes, researchers will be able to go in and then register and get access to that data, but we do have review processes in place that will ensure that the questions that researchers say that they want to ask doesn't lend itself to getting outcomes that can further stigmatize a population, if you know what I mean, right? We have to be very careful about what does that data say and how do you frame that? Context matters. And we're very conscious of that in the program.
So I think this question falls onto your comments, but it's an important one, which is that the question is whether the All of Us Research Program or those who are managing the outreach have a team that is proactively trying to engage with communities of color, with individuals of color who have rare diseases, what are currently defined as rare diseases. How are you dovetailing those two efforts?
That's a great question. And when it comes to right now, because the program, all of us right now, the program is for anyone 18 years or older. And we're disease agnostic. And what I mean by that is that we don't target particular populations that have rare diseases, that have, you know, common chronic diseases, or particular cancers or anything. We are open up to anyone that is 18 and older for now. We soon will be opening up our enrollment to children. But for now, we're 18 years of older, anyone able to sign consent. But we do focus on ensuring that we're doing community engagement efforts. For example, we talked about earlier the fact that a large part of the success that we've had in those diverse participants, Gretchen, has been due to community partnerships and organizations that we've been able to fund as community seed awards. When I think about populations that are living with rare diseases, we are definitely going to be moving into more partnerships and engaging with advocacy organizations, because I think that that is very important. I think about my own work that I've done in the cancer community space. I think it's very important for us to talk to organizations that have inroads to populations that are living with cancer and living with some of those rare cancers, right? I think it's important to have that community engagement. But the message that I think that, well, that I want to drive as the chief engagement officer is about engaging with those advocacy groups to talk about the importance of people who are living with rare conditions to enroll in the program, and researchers that are researching rare conditions to ensure that they have access to our data, and to then let us know if we're asking questions or not asking questions that allows them to be able to address the issues that relate to rare diseases. Mm-hmm. But in terms of specific outreach and engagement to populations that are living with rare disease, we have not done that type of work yet. It's been more overarching engagement. For example, when I think about populations, you mentioned earlier those intersecting identities. We know about 1 in 4 Americans are living with some form of a disability or impacted by a disability. And so as a result, we've partnered with the American Association on Health and Disabilities to ensure that we're thinking about how do we think about the intersectionality of disability in our cohort. We also know that sexual and gender minorities, those populations that I may identify as gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, or non-binary, they're often excluded in clinical trials as well. And so we think about the intersectionality of those identities. Populations that are older, greater than 65. You know, the older I get, Gretchen, 65 does not look anywhere near old, but it's older. But I say that those populations have historically been not included in research as well. So what does that look like? So we're engaging with populations like 50 forward to make sure that we have populations that have access and inreach to populations that are older than 50 and that are they have a historical record of engaging those populations. And so we work with them as examples.
So I'm hearing two things, and I hope I'm not getting that over my skis on this one with you, but I'm hearing that yes, you have individuals who are monitoring and reviewing the research questions to assure that it's not used in ways that further stigmatize or marginalize populations that have been marginalized. I'm also hearing the questions going to, for those who have been marginalized, there's an opportunity here, and the Aldous Research Program may be moving in that direction, to be proactive in assuring that those research questions are asked.
And, that is correct.
And so I'm going to make the statement to the audience that for those who are in the patient advocacy world, who work with us or want to follow up on those questions, they can always contact Dr. Watson after that. But we can also continue to have those questions in the different forums that the National Minority Equality Forum sponsored, regarding those gaps in knowledge, those gaps in evidence that we need to have to move this conversation forward. But getting to the sort of some practical aspects of the conversation about accessing the workbench. Is access to the workbench available without constraint, other than the research question conversation, without constraint or cost?
Great question. And yes, it is. And what I always want to say, to understand that there's populations that will have challenges. You know, I want to say access is available, and we've taken great strides to make sure that it's accessible. But I also want to acknowledge that there's populations, particularly during the pandemic, Gretchen, that are still dealing with bandwidth issues, internet access issues. We have populations of researchers that may be working at our community colleges or small teaching colleges where, you know, access may be still an issue. But we've taken strides to make sure, like I said before, that there's going to be three levels of access to that data that I'll briefly talk about. That publicly available data is available to anyone. Whether you're a graduate student, just a community member, a participant, you want to go log in to see what that data looks like, that's available to anyone. But that other level of data, that registered tier, it's free to access it. It's 100% free to access that data. There are some factors that may impact access, meaning that right now you have to have a researcher has to be affiliated with an institution that has a researcher agreement with the All of Us program. And it's fairly user-friendly for institutions to get those researcher agreements between their particular institution and the All of Us research program. But the research workbench has developed a help desk where if a researcher is at one of those smaller institutions, whether it's a HBCU, a historically black college or university, a minority serving institution, or even a community college that may not have access to that data use agreement or that research agreement, or they may be just entering into this research space, they can call the help desk, Gretchen, to get to walk through how that researcher can work with his or her or their institution to get access. So getting access to the workbench is 100% free. Now, there are compute costs, because particularly as you think about genomic research, it can cost, fees associated with accessing that genomic data. But right now, we provide researchers with a credit to be able to access and to compute certain information. But as we get further into the types of larger data sets, as we release genomic information, that control tier, there will be a certain cost associated with that. But we're now making sure that we're thinking about researcher credits, scholarships for researchers that come from institutions that may not have those researchers, that access, and they even encouraging researchers to write the cost to access this compute cost into their research grants.
Okay,
And the other thing I wanted to note that keeps us, we have a, so our research and workbench is overseen by our Data Resource Center that's in partnership with Vanderbilt University. And what I love is that we actually have a community advisory board that is specific to informing access issues, to keep us thinking about access issues as it relates to who's able to log on to the research workbench. For example, we ran into an issue where you had to have an ERA Commons, you had to provide certain identification. We ran into some challenges, Gretchen, because we found out that some of our researchers may be from backgrounds where they may not have, you know, identification that they could readily share and upload. And so that became an access issue that we as a program had to address, and we're in the process of addressing right now. So I do want to just to say that, yes, access is free and open. There are compute costs, but I don't want to ignore the fact that we will continue to uncover that there are populations that we're going to see that may have some barriers and their challenges to getting access, but we want to hear what those balances or challenges are so we can begin to mitigate those issues as much as possible.
Thank you. Are there any limits on the type of research that the All of Us Research Workbench can support?
I'll go through and I'll make sure that we send out to the NMQF that we have a really great two-pager that talks about, you know, if you want to become an All of Us researcher, you know, you can go to researchallofus.org. I'm not able to put that in the chat, but it's researchallofus.org, where you can learn more about how to sign up as a researcher. And right now, Gretchen, participants, the data that's available for researcher includes four overarching types that's in the database right now. We have physical measurements. So if someone wanted to know, I want to know more information about physical measurements, about things such as blood pressure, heart rate, BMI, and more. We have that information of over 267,000 participants right now in the database. We have information around from electronic health records. So one of the things that participants are asked to share when they sign up for the All of Us Research Program, they are asked to share information about their health record. So we have data from over 214,000 participants from standardized for electronic health record. We also have survey responses. This is, as a health disparities researcher, this is what's really interesting to me when I put my researcher hat on. I was really interested in the fact that we have survey respondents from over 329,000 participants on things like medical history, lifestyle, access to care. And then also we have about 100,000 participants who have provided information around how COVID-19 has impacted them. Another category of data that we have is the wearables. We have about 11,600 participants, Gretchen, who have provided information from Fitbit data, including physical activity and heart rate. So that's somewhat of a snapshot, and I can ensure that we provide the flyer that has this information on that. And forthcoming data that researchers will have access to will be genomics and biosample information.
So I don't think there are any questions in the chat. I haven't answered yet. There are, I'm sure they'll poke me. It'll be a virtual poke. But I guess a question for you is, and this is my question, why would the All of Us Research Workbench not be the first place that researchers would want to go to get some baseline information on whatever the research question is?
Yeah, I think one of the challenges is awareness. You know, that's one of the conversations I've been having with a lot of postdoc. I did a national talk recently at a conference, or it was a town hall forum for Black History Month. And there was a graduate student from Howard University who reached out and she said, I had no idea that this data set existed. You know, and I said, it's those types of emails from one student that can say that was worth it. It was worth me getting up and having that town hall forum and have that information. Because Gretchen, one of the challenges is just awareness and awareness to get the word out that this data even exists, to let people know that you can, as a researcher, as a graduate student, as a doctoral student, you can ask questions from this. I would love to have more doctoral students, you know, writing their dissertations from this work. Because when I think about as a researcher, even as a doctoral student, the amount of work and resources that it takes to do primary data collection, meaning that you're asking questions yourself and getting information, that takes a lot of resources. The fact that we have this diverse and broad secondary data set is really a rich resource to institutions and partners. I was talking to some colleagues from Xavier University in Louisiana, historically Black College University, that we know is historically known for providing pipeways and educating some of the most diverse physicians and healthcare providers that we have in the country. Many of them start their undergraduate training at Xavier University. So when I was talking to a researcher there, they were reminding us about how important the All of Us data set was to them, not only for research access, but for teaching access as well, so that they can begin to develop curriculums around how they teach their students. But I will say one of the things I want to highlight, Gretchen, is that right now, in order to analyze data from the platform, you have to know R or Python. Those are two particular programs that not a lot of researchers have been trained in knowing about. And so we're really trying to tell the program that we, A, have to think about how can we partner to develop more workshops on R and Python training? How do we develop office hours where people can come in and get and learn more about how can they use R or Python? So we are actively thinking about making sure that we create spaces and places for researchers to get more training and access to tools on R and Python so that they can really be able to analyze that data.
So that's very helpful. And what I hear in you drilling down to once again is the issue of whether we have the capacity within the researcher universes to access, to use or maximize the potential of the All of Us research database. And I'm gonna ask you if you have more to share with us regarding the work that All of Us is doing or is contemplating doing to assure that we've identified those capacity deficits and then create some support to close those deficits.
Thank you. That's 100%. We have two partnerships we have. One with Baylor University. Baylor has been funded as a community partner to actually help us think about working with minority researchers and minority students to think about this concept of mentoring, to match them with a mentor, but also to do kind of that assessment of needs that you talk about, to say, you know, as you think about, as we get you aware that this workbench exists, what are some of the historical barriers that have prevented you from accessing, you know, data sets like this? What are some of the things that you need? So working with Baylor University to directly ask some of those questions, creating a minority student research symposium. This would be our second year of having a symposium, Gretchen, where students can actually come and hear about student opportunities. And then we're even getting ready to roll out opportunities of having ambassadors, where researchers can become ambassadors for the program. They can say, this is how my career was impacted by me doing this work. And now I'm gonna reach out to my social network to ensure that other researchers in my social sphere of influence know that this is available. We also have tools being developed by partners from RTI and others that are developed in the National Library of Medicine, helping us to develop training materials and hosting workshops. And even we worked with Xavier University. They did a Saturday workshop around R and Python training. So we have more of these intentional workshops and training that's going to be happening, and more coming forward in the future.
I put myself on mute. The question this triggers, and I don't think it's a bad question, is in the years we've been working, NMQF has been working with the All of Us research program, I still hear a sort of this dichotomy. There are researchers or there are participants. There are physicians or there are participants. And it has always occurred to me that one of the best ways to increase the participant cohort, but also help assure that informed voices are included in the participant cohort, would be for practicing physicians, practicing researchers, to become participants in the All of Us research program, because this notion that somehow we're separate from each other, I think flies in the face of the concept of what the All of Us research program is trying to advance, that it is indeed all of us who are dependent upon advancing this research to move forward. I don't know if you want to speak to that.
I'm smiling, Gretchen, because that's one of my favorite topics, because like I said, prior to joining the program as the chief engagement officer, I was a co-investigator with the program, but I also was a community stakeholder in the work that I did with Community Campus Partnership for Health, CCPH, helped to inform that work. And we talked, and Al Richmond and the leader of CCPH, we talked a lot about this intersectionality. Even as I'm a participant in the All of Us research program, right? So I wore all of those hats. I was both a researcher, a participant, and I was a researcher specifically within a group of federally qualified health centers. So I worked within a group of health centers and I helped to build up a research infrastructure. And one of the challenges that my primary care providers would often tell me is that, Kareem, make sure as the All of Us program creates this database or creates access that they think about what are the challenges that physician scientists will face in getting access to this database. Give us, you know, help walk us through why this database is important to us as physician scientists. What's the so what for having an All of Us database for that physician provider, for that provider who's been trying to understand the intersectionality between the opioid epidemic and lack of access to care and racism in medicine and how certain Black and Brown communities are treated when they seek treatment for their pain, right? You know, our physicians want to know those types of things and how we'll be able to help them better ask those questions. So I think as a program, we have to do a better job, and we're doing a better job of letting researchers know what questions they may be able to ask to address issues that are important to them. And I think what you hear, and we hope that we can begin to not seem like we're siloing the message, but there are different approaches that are needed, Gretchen. There's a participant engagement that's needed. I'm an engagement scientist, right? And so I know that the way you engage someone who has enrolled in the program requires different tools, different resources than the way you engage someone who is thinking about enrolling, right? They may not be at that research readiness state. They may say, you know what, before I sign up, I want the program to deal with my issues, my justified medical mistrust. I want the program to acknowledge some of the historical injustices that have happened, you know, to marginalized communities and to people of color that may be preventing me from signing up for the program. So there's the participants, there's that population level of engagement. And then there's the researcher engagement. And the researcher engagement has many subgroups in it, because the way I engage with a clinician scientist, a researcher that may be both a provider as well as a researcher, is different than the way I engage with a researcher that may be an institution that their full-time job is research, versus the way I deal with someone that may be a health disparities researcher and a researcher dealing with more behavioral questions as opposed to direct genomic questions.
Thank you. I think we're coming close to the end of our hour. So Kareem, I'll leave it to you to share with us the message you want us to take home from this. Thank you, this extraordinary conversation for me.
Thank you so much. And again, I wanna thank the National Minority Quality Forum for creating this platform for us to have this conversation. And some take home messages, Gretchen, is I wanna just encourage those who are listening, both from the researcher community as well as the participant and the advocacy community, to continue to challenge us, to continue to ask us those questions about how we can truly ensure that the program is all of us. One of the questions that people ask is about, you know, you've heard this question is popular, like what keeps you up at night? And I won't say, I try to get a good night's rest. But one of the things that drives me is this conversation of who's not at the table and why. Right, that's the question that drives me, Gretchen, that when I say, yes, we have the bold and audacious name of saying all of us, but what are those populations that will make us look like some of us and not all of us? How do we ensure that we address things like the digital divide, populations in our rural communities and populations that are dealing with issues of access and band and broadband, right? That keeps me thinking about access issues. And we have to do more partner with community-based organizations who have thought about this work in a really intelligent way. And I also think about how do we leverage what I call like indigenous knowledge as well, because I don't want us to always think that as a program, we have all the answers. Communities have been navigating this work for much longer than we have as a program. And what I hope is that we can do more direct partnering with community-based organizations and community leaders who have been answering these questions in very thoughtful and clear way for decades, and how we can learn from them to ensure that we're engaging populations. Because it goes back to that statement I made earlier. I don't technically think that there's populations that are hard to reach. I think there are populations that are under-engaged. So how do we engage those populations that have been historically under-engaged? And how do we provide resources to groups and forums that are already doing that engagement? You know, sometimes it's about saying that, you know, it's not about us necessarily doing it, but how do we provide resources to those groups and those organizations that are already doing the work, that are already engaged? You know, there's populations that know how to reach Black researchers because they're engaged with those Black researchers every day. You know, I work with the National Association of Hispanic Health, as you know, they tell me all the time, Kareem, we know how to engage our Hispanic and our Latinx and our Spanish speaking populations. This is what we do, it's who we are. So partner with us to give us the resources to do this work. So that's one of the things that I'm excited about and humbled to, Gretchen, is to learn from that. What I think of a lot of is indigenous knowledge as a program. And I'm excited that we have this next 5-year goal where we're thinking about recruitment and retention and what will it take to not just enroll, but retain participants in the program. What will it take to ensure that researchers become aware of that we have the All of Us data set and begin to utilize that, and that we get the feedback about things that may still be barriers to access that we may not quite be aware of, and that we be able to pivot and respond to those access issues.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kareem Watson, for joining us. I look forward to continuing to work with you, and I thank our audience for joining us today. If there are any topics you would like us to explore in the future regarding the All of Us Research Program or any other topics associated with centering equity in every aspect of health services, research, delivery, and finance, please feel free to contact me. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.